Good morning, everybody. Thanks for calling in. We appreciate it. Let's just open it up for questions.
We will go first to Dave Dibert with Post Media News.
John, I'm wondering how difficult has it been for you? You know, you're obviously going into a fight would much rather be talking about the fight itself, but it seems like every interview and I guess conference call starting the same way is asking about stuff happening outside the cage. Has that been frustrating at all? How difficult has that been for you?
You know, it just is what it is. You know what I mean? I'm in a spot, in a position in my career where, you know, every little word I say, people hang on it, and it seems like it's like the center of people's lives almost. So it's like, it's whatever, man. It's flattering at times, you know. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, through all the adversity, my only job is just to stay focused on the goal, and that's what I'm doing. You know, I'm staying focused on the goal.
Now, looking at Vitor, how much, I guess you probably see, you know, bits and pieces of everyone along the way, but how much had you ever actually paid attention to him, you know, really kind of looking at him specifically? Had you ever spent any time, you know, really looking at him before all this?
You know, not really, you know, I got to watch him fight live the first time when he fought against Anthony Johnson. I was very impressed with it. I actually sat right next to his dad. I had a great conversation the whole time. So I got to watch him fight in Brazil live. And before that, you know, my only real recollection of him was his fight against Wanderlei Silva when he got that really fast knockout.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of one of the iconic moments in our sport. And then his fight with Anderson Silva. We fought the same night that night. So that was another time when I really got to focus in on him. But outside of that, I've never really paid attention to him outside of the fact that, you know, he's a Christian and I just respect him so much for being so outspoken about his love for Christ. But, you know, now that I'm fighting him, obviously all I do is watch his fights.
Okay. All right. Thanks, John. Just a quick one for Dana. You, you know, well known to be a little emotional at times. You know, the big conference call that you held when all the changes around 151 originally broke. Is there any of that you wish you could maybe have a reset button? You know, maybe just catch your breath a little bit.
I don't ever. One thing you know about me in 12 years, I don't take anything back. It's not like I wish we could go back and take it back, you know. John and I haven't seen each other yet since that whole thing. We'll see each other in Toronto. He and I need to get into a room face-to-face and talk. And, you know, I've been in this business for 12 years, and I've dealt with just about everybody you can deal with, good guys, bad guys, and, you know, John Jones isn't a bad guy. So, you know, no, I don't take anything back what I said. He and I will get into a room in Toronto and we'll talk face to face.
Okay. All right. Thanks, guys.
Cool.
We'll go next to Neil Springer with Toronto Sun.
Hey, thanks for the time, guys. Dana, I'm just curious, what was kind of the process that sort of led you to Vitor being the challenger for John Jones?
Well, I can tell you this. People talk a lot of shit, but nobody's too excited to jump around and fight John Jones right now. You know, guys were out there saying, I want the title shot next, I want the title shot next. When it came time for them to get the title shot, they turned it down. Vitor Belfort is the only guy, you know, that called, he was blowing Lorenzo up, called him and said, I want this fight with John Jones so bad. And we respect that. We like that. So Vitor got the fight.
Was there any thought to, you know, going back to Chael Sonnen because, you know, the 151 fight didn't happen, maybe see if Chael would have taken it in Toronto, or did it go, you know, straight to Vitor?
Chael Sonnen didn't have enough time to train for that fight. You know, Chael stepped up last minute and accepted the fight and everything else, and I have nothing but respect for him for doing it. But Vitor Belfort was already in camp. Vitor was already training. Vitor begged for the fight, and it made more sense.
And just one last one. I mean, what's kind of your response to people who, I guess, were a little surprised when Vitor was chosen since he's been fighting at middleweight for the last few years?
It wasn't that Vitor was chosen. You know what I mean? We didn't call Vitor up and choose Vitor. Vitor stepped up and took the fight. Guys that were next in line for the fight wanted nothing to do with it.
Okay, but I mean, what's your sort of just response to, I guess, people who are maybe a little critical of choosing Vitor?
Don't watch it.
Vitor.
Don't watch it.
All right.
If you don't like this fight and you don't think it's going to be a great fight, don't watch it.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks.
Okay.
We'll go next to Ben Folks with USA Today.
For Dana, I mean, kind of along the lines about how you came to choose Vitor, I mean, was there any thought to, hey, let's just hold on and wait till we can get, you know, if Matita wants another month or, you know, some other light heavyweight wants a little more time, why not wait until there's a real light heavyweight, existing light heavyweight contender who can take the fight? And why does it have to be now?
Because what happens is when you, first of all, I'll start with Machida. Machida was all over me that he wanted another shot at John Jones. He wanted that title shot. That fight should have been different or whatever. John, he had 4 weeks to train for that fight, maybe five, and he turned the fight down. Just, you know what I mean? So the way that you do it is you move on to the next. Who's the next guy in line? Who's the next guy in line? Vitor Belfort called him and wanted that shot. Vitor, and first of all, Vitor's a former heavyweight champion, former light heavyweight champion. I mean, for people to say Vitor Belfort's 185 pounds, Vitor Belfort was a world champion at 205 and a world champion at heavyweight. Vitor's fought everybody, you know, name any name throughout the history of the sport, he's fought them. When people start saying this crazy shit about it, he's 185 pounds, it's ridiculous. The guy's fought everybody. He's got explosiveness. He's got power in both hands. If Vitor Belfort shows up, that we've seen a million times with, you know, that explosive knockout power, if Vitor doesn't just stand out there and hang out there, he fights. This is a very dangerous fight, John Jones. For anybody to doubt whether Vitor Belfort should be, you know, getting a fight with John Jones is out of their mind. And like the guy who just asked me the question, what about people who are critical and don't think this is a good fight? Well, if you don't think it's a good fight, then don't watch it.
Well, and a question kind of along those lines for John. I mean, you mentioned before how you weren't excited about a potential rematch with Lyoto because the pay-per-view numbers weren't that great. It seemed like people weren't, you know, super excited about seeing that one. And what are your thoughts on this one? I mean, how do you feel like this is going to do on a pay-per-view? And as, you know, from a business perspective, how do you feel about this fight?
Sorry, what was your question?
I mean, you mentioned how your feelings about, from a business side, about how you weren't super excited about fighting Machida again. How do you feel about this one? I mean, how do you think it's going to do on pay-per-view? And for you, business-wise, how do you feel about this matchup?
I think it's going to be great, man. I think a lot of people are going to get together and watch this fight. You know, Vitor Belfort is respected amongst many people. You know, it's been said before that he's one of the most famous people to come out of Brazil, athlete-wise, and I think that could be somewhat true. You know, so Brazil, I'm sure they're going to tune in. They love him. And Americans are going to tune in. I mean, he pertains to the old-school generation of martial arts fans and the new generation of martial arts fans. And you know, right now, there's a lot of buzz around my name, whether it's good or bad. And I think between those two factors, a lot of people are going to tune in and watch a phenom versus another phenom.
Not to mention the fact that you got two title fights on the card. You got Jones versus Belfort. You got Benavidez versus Johnson. Michael Bisping fighting Brian Stan. I mean, it's a stacked card. And I start to get, seriously, you know, it starts to aggravate the shit out of me when guys are like, oh, I don't know if this fight's whatever. If anybody doesn't think that John Jones and Vitor Belfort are going to get in there and get after it, you're crazy.
Well, and lastly, for John, you mentioned, you know, that there's a lot of buzz around your name. Also, the odds on this one have you as a huge favorite, especially fighting a guy who's coming up from a lower weight class. I mean, does that make you feel like you're in a tough position to still do something that will impress people? I mean, kind of paint you into a corner when everybody expects you, you know, to win and the odds are so heavily in your favor.
You know, I learned not to really play towards the odds. You know, people who look at odds, you know, there's people who usually, you know, they don't fight, you know, I fight, you know, I realize the dangers in this sport, you know, and it's a sport. It's a game where anyone could win at any time. So I don't focus on odds. I really just focus on giving myself the best odds of winning by extreme preparation.
Great. Thanks, guys.
We'll go next to Joe Ferraro with Sportsnet.
Questions for Dana. Dana, first things first, it's probably good that you're finally having another event considering what happened at UFC 151. I'm sure the whole team is looking forward to having another event. But considering what's happened with John Jones and UFC 151 being canceled, is this not good for business now with all the buzz around John Jones? People do want to see him compete, whether they want to see him win or lose?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think, you know, John Jones, whether 151 happens, if it happened, it doesn't happen. You know, John Jones is one of the best fighters in the world. People are, you know, talking about John Jones anyway. but I mean, I don't think that the canceling of 151 has made him any more, you know, famous than he was before it.
Fair enough. John, question for you. Could you walk us through, since everything has gone down, what it's actually been like day-to-day preparing for this fight? You know, changing opponent, changing training camp, now training for a southpaw as explosive as Vitor, but all the stuff outside. Can you walk us through day-to-day as you get closer to the fight and the pressure coming into this defense?
You know, I don't really feel much pressure. You know, every fight is like a high-level fight. Every fight's a ton of pressure. You know, I think Rashad Evans' fight so far has been the most high-level fight I've had when it comes to pressure, just because of all the controversy and the drama, him knowing me on a personal level, knowing how we did in practice and all that type of stuff. You know, that's really more, that was more stressful than this situation. But, you know, I'm happy, man. I really am. You know, it's like, you know, I've got a great staff around me, a very supportive team around me, and I'm ready to go out there and do something great. You know, I'm ready to go out there and compete at the highest level against another former world champion. You know, it's like I'm becoming a really successful person, and I never expected it to be easy. So I feel like I'm right where I should be, and I'm just grateful for the position. I'm grateful to be talked about. You know, it's like they say, no press is bad press, and a lot of people would disagree, but I don't. I mean, my name is all over the place right now, and I'm looking at the positive in it.
Thanks, John. My next question is for Vitor. Vitor, as Ben mentioned, John opened up as a heavy favorite. Obviously, you as a massive underdog. You're training with the Black Zillions now. Can you talk about your assessment of John Jones before joining the Black Zillions, and now that you've been training there, what you think of John Jones and how you match up with him?
For sure, I want to say hello to everyone, and it's a journey for me, man. You know, I have a culture. I'm righteousness in relationship. I have peace in the process, and I have joy in the journey. So for me, it's a journey, man. I'm 35 years old. I've been fighting for 17 years, and I had great fights under my career. And I fought guys like when I fought Chuck Liddell, I had 4 weeks to prepare. I came from a reality show, and then I called me and say, hey, you got the fight, let's do it. So I'm a type of old school guy, you know, so I was training 2 weeks in my camp. And then when I see the cancellation, and I see a lot of buzz on Twitter, you know, guys do respect each other, you know, that's everyone sells the fight whatever they want. So when I see that, I felt sorry for the fans, and I text Lorenzo and Dana at the same time and say, guys, if you need someone that, because I knew it has to make sense for John Jones to fight someone for a title fight. You know, I know his position, he's young, he's the best guy in that weight division, the new breed, the new, it's a guy from coming from this area, is their different mentality, they come in different area. So as an old school guy, man, I say, if you need me to go there, you know, I'm willing to do it. You know, I have a different mentality than everybody else. I'm enjoying this journey. Now I fight not for the fame, not for the money, not for the position. I fight for the pleasure. It's a joy. It's I'm enjoying the times that I had pressure in the past, that thing. You know, like you cannot lose. You have to represent your team. Now, I'm just there, man, having fun. So for me, fighting John Jones, I've never in my life had an idea that I would be fighting in the high level that I'm still fighting. I used to fight in the same car of Dan Severn, Mark Coleman. You know, I got this area. So I'm like a young dinosaur. So I'm an old lion in the midst of this young lion, so I'm enjoying this jungle, you know what I mean? So for me, I just want to thank God every day for still surfing that wave in the high level. So it's a pleasure, it's a challenge, man, you know? People turn down fights, you know? I cannot understand, I cannot see that. So I love challenges, and this is another challenge in my life, and we go forward, and we move forward, you know? That people that create lights, people that create things, that they like, example, like when Dana White and Lorenzo bought UFC, everybody, no, this thing never going to go forward. They believe it. They pay the price. You know, they went there and they sacrificed themselves. And that's what I'm doing. And I'm enjoying the process, man. I have peace, you know, in the process, enjoying the journey, man. It's a pleasure. And I'm so thankful every day for being healthy and be able to do that.
Thank you. And one quick question for Demetrius and Joseph, if I can, guys. So off of Joseph, guys, you're less than 2 weeks away from, you know, making or creating UFC history. Just want to know what's going on through your head right now as we get closer to next Saturday night. So off of Joseph, I guess.
You know, just pure excitement for me, inspiration, you know, motivation at an all-time high. You know, this is what I've worked for my entire career, you know, since I started the game, was to be champion. You know, I get to be UFC champion. And it's definitely a cherry on top that it's the first one ever. You know, I mean, what a way, you know, to start a legacy. You know, that's the, you know, that's what we're trying to do here. And, you know, that's a great beginning. So that's definitely a cherry on top. It's awesome to be on this card that's so stacked. And, you know, even though now we're the co-main event, we get so much more eyes and so many more fans to watch us do what we do. And, you know, I have 100% faith, you know, that we're going to deliver. And like I said, you know, that many more people are going to be watching. So, you know, just excitement for me, man. It feels great that all this is paying off, and I'm just grateful for the opportunity and the new weight class and everything, and I'm going to do my best to make it the most exciting division in the sport.
Yeah, well, 2 weeks out, I'm super excited. Can't wait to get in there and mix it up with Joseph, you know, great competitor, and like you said, you know, be able to make history and to be the first ever, you know, fighters to, you know, be crowned a flyweight champion in a new weight class is just, you know, I'm speechless. And I agree, you know, I believe we're both going to deliver, and there's a reason why, you know, Dana White, you know, opened up the flyweight division, had the tournament, you know, had the best four guys in the world, basically introducing the weight class, and, you know, we're going to deliver on September 22nd. Thanks, guys.
We'll go next to John O'Regan with Fighters Only Magazine.
Hi, guys. Thanks. Okay, I've got three questions, the first of which is for Dana. Just to change tack slightly, and could we talk a bit about the Michael Bisping and the Brian Stann fight? Obviously, the winner of that fight emerges, you would have to say, as kind of a contender. But you've also got the issue that you've got a lot of guys at middleweight now that are also emerging as contenders. You've got four or five guys that could realistically be put forward for a title shot. So, how do you feel about that situation and this coming fight between Bisping and Stan, and how do you see the upper end of middleweight playing out at the moment?
Sorry, it's Steve Keogh here. Unfortunately, Dana White has had to jump this call, so unfortunately he cannot take that question or any further questions. Tom Wright, the UFC's Director of Canadian Operations, can take calls pertaining to Canada, so I just wanted to let you know that. Please go forward with your next question for the fighters.
Okay, so the next question is a joint question for John and Vito, and I'll put this to John first. Earlier in the call, John, you mentioned that one of the things you like about Vito is that, you know, he's a fellow Christian and he's got love for Christ, which he openly professes, as you do yourself. And this is a serious question. Like, sometimes I find it strange that two religious guys, presumably, you know, are both going to be praying for victory on the night, which would involve stopping or, you know, otherwise defeating an opponent. And sometimes it seems to me like it's a little bit contrary to the spirit of Christianity. How would you answer that?
Well, I don't believe that God gives me an advantage over my opponents at all. I think God could care less about a UFC fight. What I do believe is that God helps me live a certain life. He helps me. You know, I'm constantly seeking Christ, and I'm constantly trying to develop a stronger relationship with Christ. You know, I'm constantly trying to grow closer to Christ. You know, so it's like, you know, I believe that you know, my relationship with Christ helps me live a better life than what I think most 25-year-olds would be living. I mean, right now, I have the option to do whatever I want, when I want, be friends with who I want, do, you know, and I know it sounds a little taboo to people who don't understand this type of lifestyle, but, I mean, I live a pretty crazy life, and I really think that if I didn't have Christ in my life, I would be a hot mess. I mean, it would be a lot of craziness going on. You know, a lot of guys on my team right now who are in their 30s, they're just like, dude, if I had what you had at your age, man, I wouldn't even be fighting anymore, you know? So it's like, mm-hmm. You know, Christ in my life helps me out a lot. So I, you know, there's football players that are Christians that play on different teams. There's, you know, Christians compete against each other all the time. I don't think God has a favorite in this fight. I think I think God's just blessed me and Vitor to be in the position that we are. We're both famous and successful, and I think that's blessing enough. I think, you know, the winner of this fight is going to be the person who wants it bad enough, the person who trains hard enough and studies more. So I don't really feel as if there's any contradiction, like, you know, who's God going to come through for. I think God has already come through for both of us.
Uh-huh. Okay, thanks. And the same question to Vitor, please.
Very good answer, Jones. Yeah, man, you know, Jesus only expects one thing from everybody, every Christian. He wants you to do your best, you know. And I'm doing my best, man. You know, I'm just here loving people. I love to hear a Christian fella understand the vision of real Christianity. I don't believe Christianity is a religion. Christianity is a relationship. And as me and Jones, we are brothers in Christ, man, and that's our job, you know. We are fighters. I have such a much respect for a man like him. And I understand we all make mistakes. I don't have rights to judge anybody. You know, I don't have rights to make choices to anybody, but I have choices. I have rightness to make my own choices. And my choice is to live a life to Christ. And everything I do when I'm fighting, when I'm training, you know, my life is not depending. I don't depend in anything besides Jesus. So he's my provision. So I go there to fight at my best. And that's the only thing I can do, you know. I cannot control the outcome. I cannot control how people think. You know, I don't like when people trying to make fighters hate each other. I don't like to talk trash. I just like to do what I do, you know, and I honor Jesus with my attitudes. And I think attitudes talk louder than words. So it's a pleasure, man. It's just an honor for me to fight a champion like Jones, you know. But also to see he's getting mature in Jesus. And the more he grows up, he's going to face so many things in life. We all face so many things. But our focus, just like he said, it has to be in Jesus, because the world has a tendency to bring us, you know, to the hype, you know, creating the atmosphere for us. So when you're in Jesus, you're safe. And you have to understand this is a competition. This is can go either way. It's a 50-50. So we're going to go there and do our job as we're doing for Jesus with honor, respect, and we're gonna just compete. And I love the guy, man. You know, I have a lot of respect, a man who can live Christianity. And that's what I live for, you know. That's why I prophesy the name of Jesus. I know people judge me, but you know what? When you point a finger, man, You have four fingers pointing back to you, so you got to be careful, because the way you judge is the way you're going to be judged by God. And I don't want to judge anyone, because I don't want God to judge me. I want God to save me.
Okay, thanks, Lisa. Can I just ask you a quick follow-up question? If you're not successful, if you don't win the fight, do you think you're going to stay at light heavyweight, or are you going to move back down to 185?
Hey, man, I'm doing this for the organization and for the journey, man. You know, I had a fight scheduled for Brazil, and when I see the cancellation, I just text Lorenzo, and as an old school guy, I know a lot of guys doing this, and I don't have a manager. I am my own manager, you know what I mean? I was thinking, when I was 19 years old, winning the tournament in UFC, John Jones was 9 years old, bro. So I never thought in my life I would be able to fight a guy like John Jones. People have to have a contender. You got to understand, when you are a contender, when you know what I mean, you're not a champion, you're a contender. Man, if you have that chance to go and fight one of the best guys in history, the guy who, he's the new phenom. So, you know what I mean? So I just put myself for the organization, and they don't have anybody to put for Jones. Everybody turned him down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go there to compete, bro. I'm there to win, to compete in my high level competition, and that's it. You know, I'm not thinking, oh, my career, I have to do this, I have to. No, I did everything. I'm very happy for what I did in the sport, and now I'm just enjoying the moment, the process, and the journey. You know what I mean? I hope I can be an inspiration for all the athletes, the guys that are coming up, and that's what I do. That's my legacy, man. Just enjoying the journey.
Okay, great. Thanks very much, Vitor. I'm going to clear the line now and let some other people get some questions in. Thanks, guys. Bye.
We'll go next to Thomas Garassi with UFC.
Hey, guys. Question for Vitor. Vitor, in a lot of ways, you were the phenom before John Jones was the phenom. What do you remember about those days? You know, 19, 20 years old, running through everybody. And what was the downside of that, you know, in terms of the pressure and whatnot?
You know, every day is a different day. Every season is a different season. So, you know, when I look back and I look myself in the past and I see maturity. You know, I see how much I grow in the stature with maturity, wisdom, and that's it, man. You know, I enjoy. You know, the past is a cancel check. The future is a promissory note. And today is all you have. It's all the cash you have. But trying to enjoy, rejuvenating myself, looking at these young fighters, and enjoying the process right now. You know, enjoying the today.
When you talk about the process and the journey, did it help when you coached on Tough Brazil, you know, seeing the struggle of the young guys coming up? Did it make you appreciate, you know, to have more?
For sure. You know, today is like another day. I was talking to my friend, and we having a conversation. And he was coaching me. He was like, Dad, you know, John Jones have that reach, you know. You're moving here. I was watching him training, and he's coaching me. And I said, man, he's 7 years old. And he fights like John Jones, you know, he likes the spinning elbows. He loves that John Jones style. And I would say, David, I'm so proud of you, son. You know, so today he doesn't see it as a sport. He doesn't see jiu-jitsu, boxing. You know, I used to drive my bike 1 hour to train boxing. I used to train boxing, you know, nobody could know because it came from the jiu-jitsu background. So back the old days, you know what I mean, you know, even workout, we couldn't work out, you know. So it's a totally different mentality, different moment. It's a different vision. I cannot try to make my son be like me. So the key is just to respect, you know, these young fighters, but also how you can apply your knowledge that you have to the moment. You cannot be negligent in the science. You cannot be negligent in the evolution. You know, you have to evolve, you know. You cannot stay the same. You have to evolve. You have to see further. Use your experience in the right moment and make it better. And so that's how Olympic athletes break records. So you cannot think you know everything. You have to be open-minded. You know, you have to be wise, wisdom. But I think the experience that I have for sure helps to guide in life. You know, I think it's more in a personal level, more in a man level. So I think that's the biggest success in athletes, you know, the success in personal life, in the personal level.
Right, right. And finally, Vitor, you're training down with the Black Zillions in Florida. Why were they the right fit for you at this point?
You know, I was in Brazil. You know, I had a lot of good trainers there, but I was lacking sparring partners. And I want to train with the best guys, you know. And here they have me and Glenn, and we are talking in the past. I was supposed to come here, but then I have to fight. They scheduled me to fight AJ. So I didn't come back then. And after I call him, and we're talking, me and Glenn, we're talking some business, and said, man, come. Come check it out. So I had my fight in Brazil with Alan Belcher. So I came here, started training here, and I loved it. You know, it's a great fit for me. You know, I love training with amazing athletes, you know, champions, K-1 champions, MMA champions. And they have, like, the Brazilian culture here, you know, kind of. And I'm enjoying, man. I'm just training with the young guys, you know. This team is amazing. They have a lot of young future champions here. It's good to be in the mix, you know, training with high-level people. I loved it. This is like being in Disneyland for me.
Right. Thanks, Vitor. Good luck to everyone next week.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Ryan Young with the Toronto Observer.
Hi, yes. This question is for John. You didn't score a finish, or you said that you want to be one of the most dominant fighters of all time, and to do that, you need to win and win impressively. In April, you failed to finish Rashad, first time in over 3 years, one of your wins went to a decision. What do you attribute that to, and has that changed anything in your preparation to make sure that Vitor doesn't make it through to the final bell?
With Rashad, I think a part of me saw a guy that I had been sparring against, and I feel as if, some of those elbows were definitely malicious, but my killer instinct was just not there for some reason. I was more focused on, I hate to say this, but I was more focused on just winning that fight. That's something where I need to reobserve myself on a psychology level. I have been trying to reobserve myself on a psychology level. But Vitor is someone that I really don't know, I think I'll have a better time going out there and feeling like I'm at war. But with Rashad, it's like my teammates here at Jackson's, none of them can say to me, I hate going with John Jones because he always tries to hurt us. He always tries to kick me in the head. He always tries that flying knee, I never hurt my teammates because we respect each other so much. I have teammates that try to hurt me, but I don't like going with, but as a team leader, it's my job to go against the best guys on my team. But I'm not going to sit here and say that I took it easy, but there was something in my bones that didn't allow me to really, really try to really hurt him. And I think that was a small part of why I couldn't finish Rashad. And to his credit, Rashad is an awesome warrior. I mean, he's only lost once in like 20-something fights. It's like me and Rashad are both gifted. We're both winners. Our styles are different. Entertainment factors could be different, but at the end of the day, we're both winners. And to go against a winner and as if I dominated him, that speaks for itself. Finishing, I wish I could have, but I couldn't.
Okay, and this next question is for Vitor. Obviously, odds makers, a lot of people in the media have you pegged as a huge underdog. Are you entering this fight with the mindset of being an underdog, and does that affect your preparation at all?
Hey, man, nothing affects my mind. I'm just focusing in the process. I'm not worried about what people say, what people think. I don't even care, It doesn't make any sense for me. People think different. People have different mentality, I'm going to go there, with the mentality to do my best, and that's the only thing I can do. And that's what everyone should do, and doing your best. And that's it. I'm not thinking, overthinking, I'm just enjoying every day. Every day is a joy. It's a great, great challenging for me. I'm going up my weight class, going back to my old weight class, doing a big adventure fight, big fight. It's a big fight, and I'm enjoying the process. That's good. I go there, and I don't have any pressure. Just joy. Be happy, smiling. Every moment of the fight, doesn't matter what type of position I'm in, doesn't matter what I go through, I went through the hardest things in life, in the professional life and the personal level. So it's a joy. I learn how to be happy even when I'm sad. So it's going to be a great, great challenge for myself. I love challenging.
Okay, and last question here for Joseph. With both Chad Mendes and Uriah Faber recently coming up short in their title attempts, what would bringing UFC gold back to El Fanal do for that camp?
That's going to mean a lot for me and for our team for sure. They both had the title shots, and I believe, in the future both of them will get it again, and they're training hard and two of the best in the world. But, that's kind of the thing right now lacking from our team. You can look at our team and say, that's one of the best teams in the world, or a lot of people say that's one of the best teams, lightweight guys. But, you know, the one thing missing is the UFC title. So, you know, that's going to mean a lot for me to bring it to the team. You know, I'm a product of them and, you know, how they push me and what they've taught me and everything. So, you know, it's going to mean a lot for me to bring the belt back to Team Alpha Male for sure. And, you know, if they would have won it, it would have been just as motivating. You know, they would have won it, and I would have felt like, hey, I got to complete this little triangle here and get the third belt so we all have it. And, you know, the fact that neither of them won it, it's just as motivating knowing now that I have to go do it and how much it's going to mean for that. So,
perfect. Thanks for your time, guys, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Ariel Helwani with MMAfighting.com.
Hey, guys. Thanks for the time. I'll start with John first. Obviously, last week you said that, you know, you were hurt by what Dana White said on the conference call when he canceled the event. You said you felt like a piece of meat. Since then, Dana has... You know, he obviously hasn't taken back what he said. He said that earlier today, but he's calmed down a little bit. He said he was very emotional, and he did say that part of the blame should go on Dan Henderson's shoulders and whatnot. Do you feel like he, by saying those things, made it better, mended the fences with you, or are you still feeling the same way as you did last week?
You know what? I'm over it, man. I really am. You know, I'm actually getting more and more excited to talk to Dana and get this behind us. No, the UFC is an awesome brand, and, you know, in this situation, I had to stand up for myself. I had to do what was right. But at the same time, me holding a personal beef against Dana gets me nowhere. I mean, he's still my boss at the end of the day. He has every right to express how he feels. He has the freedom of speech. You know, I've said some things about the way I felt about the way Dana handled the situation. I also feel as if the fans are kind of using their minds a little bit and realizing that it truly wasn't my fault, that I'm not a UFC executive. You know, Dan Henderson got hurt. That's what happened. They asked me to put my livelihood on the line, put my belt on the line. I turned that down like many smart champions would have done. You know, think about it. Floyd Mayweather versus Manny Pacquiao. Pacquiao gets hurt. You think he would have fought Cotto last minute? No. No one would have done it. No one. And the guys who say they would have done it, you know, they're not me, I guess. But anyways, I'm over it. I'm ready to move forward with Dana. I think me and Dana being on the same team, me being on the team at the UFC and not being one of those nemesis type of athletes, was going to get us very far. Me as an individual athlete and the UFC, you know, having a mainstream athlete, you know, the guy that's trying to break down walls with mainstream America. And I can't do that. I'm having a problem with the UFC. So I'm totally over it, ready to talk to Dana and get past this. And it's nothing, man. Like, Greg Jackson said it best. You know, Dana White is an extremely passionate guy. You know, he uses that passion and he goes into these meetings with CEOs who wants nothing to do with the UFC, and he convinces them with his passion why they should invest with the UFC. So you take a guy who can be emotional, who can be passionate, and you get on that guy's bad side, and you're going to hear things that you don't expect to hear. Was I surprised by the way he talked about me and kind of belittled me? I was surprised by it, but at the same time, you know, I'm educated by it, forever better by it, and I'm over it.
So given that, and I know he's your boss, why not call him up and so that you can go into Toronto and not have to have a meeting and not have to think about this? Why not try to have this conversation before you go to Toronto so that this doesn't fester in the air and we don't have to ask if you guys have talked to each other and all this stuff?
Right. Well, I'm sure when I get into Toronto, it'll be on both of our priority lists to get together and talk about it. Face-to-face, you know, we'll talk about it face-to-face, and I'm sure I'll get to explain to him exactly how I felt. I'm sure he already knows how I felt through the interviews. I understand how he feels through the interviews. Like, he's not going to take anything back that he said. I'm totally not going to take back anything that I said. Obviously, I can't take back my decision, nor would I if I had the chance to do it all over again. And, we understand that we're both grown men. We don't have to agree with each other. That's business, and that's what happens in friendships. Not to say that we're best buddies or anything, but, you know, a part of every relationship, whether it's husband and wife, best friends, or business partners, is disagreements. And I think ultimately it's going to make my relationship with the UFC even stronger. I think they'll have a higher level of respect for me, and I'll have a higher level of respect for them, and we're going to grow together even stronger.
Okay, and just two last for the flyweights. I'll start with Joseph. Is it somewhat fitting in your mind, Joseph? You've talked about, you know, when you came to the UFC, you were going from main events in WC to the undercard, and now here you are fighting in, you know, a title fight, a historic title fight. You go from the main event to the co-main event, and even all the talk going into it is,
you know, for whatever reason, the big storyline, whatnot, it's not on you guys. It's a lot of the attention is on Jones and Belfort. Do you just chuckle at this kind of thing? Do you use this as motivation? Do you feel like this is something you have to deal with until you do establish yourself as a UFC fighter? How do you react to that? Because you've had to deal with a lot of that kind of stuff.
You know, the best way to deal with it for me is just keeping my eye on the prize, and that's the UFC belt. You know, when I got into the sport and wrote down my goals, you know, it was never to be a UFC main event or to be on a UFC main card. It was to be the UFC champion. And, you know, I still get to do that. So my eyes on that prize, and that's what I'm 100% focused on. You know, I'm in this sport for a long time. I'm going to continue to you know, fight with my whole heart and put on a show. And you know, I believe main events will come. But like I said, man, my eyes are on the prize, and that's all that matters. I still get to do that. And like I said earlier, I get to do that now with even more fans watching. So the fact that John Jones's fans, Vitor Belfort's fans, and even more fans are going to watch it, you know, that's going to just help the process speed along even quicker for me.
And for Demetrius, we didn't think that you'd be able to fight this early after your win over Ian McCall, because you said you might have to go under the knife and whatnot. How are you feeling now, and how did you dodge that bullet of having to have surgery?
You know, I'm feeling great. Body feels good, you know, 2 weeks out. You know, just now should stop, making sure everything is healthy and sharp and all that good stuff. And, you know, avoiding the whole thing, you know, I was basically misdiagnosed with, you know, I can't even think of what it was, but I was misdiagnosed. And basically, I always tell people, you know, what happens is that basically when the man gets a bisecting, when they get the wires cut, you know, in their ball sack or whatever, those wires in there were pretty much swollen. So when I got checked out, you know, the doctor was like, oh yeah, it's protruding, man. We got to get in there and get you underneath the knife. And I was like, all right, whatever. And then I went to the surgeon. The surgeon was like, I'm not sure if you have, you know, I can't think of the word it was. You don't have that happen to you. So I was like, all right, well, he was like, I want you just to rest for like a month. Just don't do nothing for a month. And I was like, well, I just can't do that. You know, I'm an active fighter. I want to stay active. So I want to get another third opinion. And he goes, no, man, you just got put real bad. You know, we got kicked in the nuts. And he was like, you know, here's some naproxen, which is an anti-inflammatory. And I was on that for maybe a week. And then everything went down. And then just drive right back to camp. And they offered this site. Well, they didn't have to offer it, but they were saying that you're going to do it in Toronto. And so everything was good.
We'll go next to Adam Martin with the score.
Hey, is Tom Wright still on the call?
Tom Wright's on the call.
Okay, great. Hey, Tom. Just how are ticket sales going up for the event after the announcement that Jones will fight Belfort?
Ticket sales picked up significantly after that announcement. And you know, I can tell you that we still have some tickets left in all price points, but they're moving really quite quickly. You have to remember that it has been a long time since we've had two championship bouts on the same card. The last time was actually the first time I came to Toronto for UFC 129, and the time before that was UFC 100. So it doesn't happen very often. We're really confident about you know, how things are going to end up in the last. We've got 11 days before UFC 152 starts, and I'm looking forward to welcoming Joseph and Demetrius and John and Vitor to my hometown and to a great city, and it's going to be a wonderful event.
If you had more time to, you know, promote the Jones and Belfort card, was there ever a possibility that, you know, that could have been in a Rogers Center with the two title fights?
You know, I think it might have been, but, you know, you can't change what's happened, right? So, I mean, you know, hypothetically it could have, but right now, you know, it is what it is, as Dana would say, and we're really excited about it. This card's stacked, as Dana said, and on top of these two title fights, we've got Brian Stann and Michael Bisping, and obviously a huge contender fight, and there's a bunch of Canadians on this card as well. So it's going to be a great night, and I'm very confident that it's going to be a great success.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, the Canadians on the card. Just some fans on Twitter have been, you know, talking to me, and they're saying that there's not enough Canadians. There's only three appearing, whereas the last time you guys came, I think there were seven or eight. So, I mean, why the lack of Canadian content?
Well, you got to remember that that this fight is one of three in Canada that are going to be really held over a 6 month period. We had UFC 149 in July in Calgary. We've got this one in September. Then less than two months after this one, we've got UFC 154 in Montreal, and so we've got Canadians on all these cards. We had, I believe, eight in Calgary. We've got three or four in Toronto. We're probably going to have more than that in Montreal, although all the fights haven't been announced yet for Montreal. So really, over a six-month period, you're going to see, you know, 12, 14 Canadian fighters competing. So, you know, I think we've done a really good job.
When I talked to you at the press conference, actually, a couple of weeks ago in Toronto, I was asking about the testosterone replacement therapy. Do you know offhand if any fighters on the card have applied for a therapeutic use exemption for TRT?
I don't know whether they have. So I can't really answer that question. I can do a follow-up for you and find out, but I don't know of anything on right now, and happy to connect with you later, and I can do some homework on that.
Yeah, that'd be great, Tom. Just one last thing. Today, obviously, September 11th. I was going to ask Dana this, but, you know, is the UFC considering doing another Fight for the Troops, maybe even possibly a Canadian version of the Fight for the Troops in the near future?
Absolutely. And it's something that Steve Keogh and I have been talking about doing here in Canada as well. We've done them many times in the U.S. They've been tremendously successful. It's a good chance we'll do one again. I mean, that's obviously going to be Dana Lorenzo's call. But I'd love to see us do something like that in Canada as well.
Thank you, Tom.
Anytime.
We'll go next to Ron Kruk with Inside MMA.
Hey, guys. Two quick questions. I'd like to start with John Jones. John, a reporter earlier asked Dana if, you know, he had any regrets or what he said in regards to the UFC 151 cancellation. Now that you've had some time, John, to kind of sit back and see this play out, is there anything that you feel you would do differently, or are there any lessons that you've learned through this whole process?
You know, as I said it before, as far as the lesson that I learned, and that is that, you know, and it's kind of it's a sad message, but it's a legit message. It's that, you know, at the end of the day, you know, people are going to do what's right for themselves. You know, it's like, I did what was right for my family. You know, I do acknowledge the fact that a lot of people sacrificed their time, you know, the UFC production crew, to create commercials, you know, to create the flyers, the people. A lot of people have put their time into this, and, you know, the event never happened. So I acknowledge what happened, but at the same time, I had to do what was right for myself and my family and my brand, and so I did what was right for myself, and Dana White did what was right for himself. You know, he really put the blame on a lot of people, and you know, no one's ever really brought up the conversation of, you know, who really made that decision. I think everyone's just kind of ignoring it, as if the whole world's afraid to just confront the guy about it and say, dude, you canceled it, not John Jones. So he did what was right by himself by really blaming a lot of other people around him. I did what was right for myself by not doing it. So that was the lesson ultimately learned by me, is that at the end of the day, people are going to do what's right for themselves. You know, it's a natural human emotion to survive. And, you know, that's what we both did. You know, no one's giving him crap, and I didn't take that fight. We both did what was right for ourselves. As far as anything I would have done differently, I don't know, man. It's like, you know, I make a lot of mistakes. You know, I say a lot of things that make people upset. You know, I don't think people realize that, you know, 5 years ago, I was just an average kid and went to high school, grew up poor, you know, went to college, dropped out. You know, I'm a normal dude, you know, and I'm a 25-year-old, you know. I'm like, it's like, I'm going to make lots of mistakes, you know. I've never got officially trained for PR and stuff. I'm a snotty-nosed dude that, you know, I say what I feel, and some people totally dig me and understand everything I say. Other people think I'm the most arrogant whatever person in the world, who knows. But I'm just me, and I'm growing to be more comfortable in my skin, and, you know, everyone keeps saying, you should hire a PR guy. It's like, you know, at first they said I was too fake, now they want me to hire a PR guy to give them something watered down and fake. Listen to the things that I say, and some people find legitimacy. Some people think I'm full of it, but I'm just me, and you know, I'll be the first to admit that I'm not perfect. I'm not going to always be able to say what people want to hear, but I'm just me, man. So I can't say I would have done anything different. I've done everything the way I know how to, and I'm not going to sit here and try to take things back. Even me calling Dan Henderson an old man and saying his bum knee, he's like, I'm not going to take that back either. I'm not going to take anything back. You know, he called me a kid 1,000 times, and I finally call him old man. You know, that was like the only part I got, like, rude in the whole situation. Outside of it, I really supposed to handle a lot of this with grace. If you really look at what happened, I didn't get injured. You know, I was training. The fight was supposed to go on. You know, freaking, I showed up. Chael Sonnen had nothing to do with the situation. So I feel as if I honestly to sit here and say, outside of me calling fans and old man, that was the only thing that I did was classless. Everything else, man, I'm riding this journey like everyone else is.
I appreciate you opening up on that, John. Follow up question, and then I'm finished. You know, there are several fighters who then took to social media and began to criticize you. You know, Tito Ortiz was one of them. Do you think that was uncalled for and unfair?
No, I don't think it's uncalled for. You know, it's like, I said it once. You know, like I'm really not here to be popular amongst other fighters. You know, I definitely love a lot of the fighters that don't train at Jackson. I have good friends with fighters from almost every camp. But at the end of the day, man, you know, it's like, these guys, you know, they're awesome. I respect them all as warriors. But, they're, you know, these guys are my best friends. I don't know if the fans have that illusion or not, but, you know, I'm here to work, you know. I'm like that guy who comes to work every day. I do my assignment. I do it the best I can, and then I go away. And that's my perspective. I'm not getting it twisted and getting sad because fighters are talking about me. It's great that they're talking about me. Their fans are reading the articles and creating more interest. So it's like, you know, it's whatever when it comes to other fighters.
Thanks so much, guys. We'll see you in Toronto.
We'll go next to Damon Martin with MMAweekly.com.
Yeah, just kind of following up on that with you, John, you know, throughout this whole process, you've made those comments on Twitter and things saying, you know, you're not here to be loved and you know, this is about, you know, your career and things like that. I mean, do you feel like you've kind of embraced that role a little bit? I mean, a lot of people made the comparison to your decision with UFC 151 to the LeBron James thing last year and how he was so vilified. I mean, do you see any similarities and have you had to kind of embrace that role of just saying, I'm going to be me and I'm going to say what I want to say and I'm not worried about pleasing people?
Yeah, you know, I think I have embraced that role a little bit more of just, I'm not going to say I've embraced the role of being a villain because I'm not a villain. I'm not a bad person. You know, I pride myself off of inspiring others, you know, like, you know, for all that people that think I'm cocky, it's like, if you really listen to what I talk about, if you talk to me about fighting, you may just hear something that's a little arrogant because, you know, right now I train so hard to not even get hit, let alone talk about losing a fight. So it's like, I love this sport so much, I owe it to myself to think of myself in the highest regard. So I'm not going to apologize if I'm a little full of myself when it comes to MMA, because you got to be full of yourself. That's the way you master yourself. That's where you master your abilities, to be the biggest critic of yourself and to be able to praise yourself and speak highly of yourself. So I'm not apologetic about that, that slight arrogance that I may hold when it comes to being a martial artist. As a person, I'm like the nicest dude ever to everyone who's ever met me. You go to the fan expos and everyone who leaves John Jones' line is happy. There are pictures and things signed. When I meet people every day in the streets, I'm the nicest person to people. Every day I walk into Jackson's gym and I hand out boxes of equipment. I order stuff all the time for my teammates and give it out and just give it to people. I'm like the nicest person ever. And I know that for a fact. I'm comfortable with myself when it comes to that. So it's like, I'm not going to ever embrace the role of being a villain because I'm not a villain. I'm the guy who's going to try to inspire people and make this sport better and make myself and my brand, like, to give back. So I'm not going to ever embrace a villain role because that's not who I am as a person. I love people. I love strangers. But at the same time, yeah, I'm going to start making comments and saying things that I feel is true and just being more comfortable with myself. And it's a crazy journey. You know, I'm not used to people hanging on every word I say, and, you know, everything I tweet is like a new article and stuff like that, or everything I say is a new article, but I got to be comfortable with myself, man. It's like, you know, like I said, I never had like an official PR training, and nor do I want one. I want to express who I am as a person, and this is who I am.
That will conclude today's question and answer session. Mr. Keel, I will turn the conference back to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Thanks, operator. I want to thank Tom Wright, Dana White, and, of course, all the fighters for taking time out of their busy schedules. We'll see everybody in Toronto next week, and thanks very much. Have a great day.